lot of people want to be in a hurry, and the agents say, well, I got a guy that's going to help you out. He's a contractor, and the adjuster's got a guy, and everyone's got a guy, and everyone wants to push you to move the claim and keep going and get it done. Because the quicker they can settle it, they know it's underpaid, the quicker they can close out the claim. It's more when it comes to the residential claims, I think. A lot of those people with families, they just want to be back in the house. And then at the end, they're like, wow, well, we don't even have enough money to fix our house. You were in such a hurry, you just let them do anything, and now you're out of money.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Andy Gerchek is a public adjuster recovering investors tons of money. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Started in construction sales, fell into adjusting, meeting someone that was already a PA, learning the ropes. Since then, we opened all city adjusting. It's been like this on my own about over 10 years now.
Okay, absolutely awesome. What is, just for our listeners so they understand, what or who is a public adjuster?
Easy terms, because public adjusting, I guess it's, when people think public, it's kind of not a term that everyone knows. I would just easy say it's a private adjuster. It's an adjuster you hire that represents you in your insurance claim and advocates for you. He doesn't work for the insurance company. He's not hired by any insurance company parties. He's only there to represent you.
Is there, and maybe this will be one of the things that we were going to largely focus on in this episode, is the do's and don'ts of insurance claims. And I guess if we're going to cover this later, tell me, but is there a right time to get a public adjuster involved? And is there a wrong time to get a public adjuster involved?
We would advise the quicker the better. So for our commercial clients, they call us as soon as something happens. Then we file the claim, we do everything for them. They're all hands off. So the only thing they know is once the claim is settled, the amounts, and that's it.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Well, let's dig right in then. Let's get into the meat of this, which is the do's and don'ts of insurance claims. Can you just break that down for us?
Yeah. Do's, if I'm going to give you your clients tips on the do's of claims, when you're filing claim, know when you're actually calling yourself to set the reserve side, to actually tell them that it's a large claim. When you're calling the claim, they'll usually ask how much damage there is because they want to set a reserve for that claim and amount. And what happens is if the reserve's low and the claim's actually a large claim, then to actually go and estimate and negotiate over those limits or the reserves they saved, it goes through like 3-4 managers and it's just a long process. And it's a very tedious. That's usually a lot of our new clients when they call us is that process. When they call us a little bit too late, our reserves were set low. Instead of a $100,000 claim, now we're at a $300,000 claim, and you're going through this whole process of getting that money approved or that claim approved.
So you're saying on the back end at the insurance company, you call in, you say, hey, man, we had a fire in one of our units, and I don't know, you're kind of running off the back of a napkin math. You look at it and you say, by the time we get the fire damage remediated and whatever, now water damage to the property and maybe $100,000, and your estimate was way off. But that's what you told the insurance company. You said $100,000. And so they're sitting on their back end going, okay, we'll tag $100,000 in the reserve account for Sam's claim. And now you're saying that causes problems when you go back and say, actually, no, sorry, guys, we're going to need about $300,000.
100% correct.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting. I mean, it seems like an insurance claim would be, and obviously I'm wrong, but it is what it is, but that's not the case.
No, they have certain amount of reserves they have to put in when there's a claim filed. When that amount is low, like I said, it hurts your claim going forward. So if you're calling a claim and it's a fire, you just might as well just say it's a total loss. Even if it's not, exaggerate the damage, say it's more damage, set those reserves higher. And that way, and then adjusters also, insurance adjusters have incentives to stay under the reserves, right? There's bonuses and there's stuff when they stay under the reserves. So it's a whole, it's an entire process they have. It's an entire game they have. So you want to get off to the right foot. So not only is it when you call them in setting the reserves high enough, but also saying the right stuff. So a lot of people, they jeopardize their claims by how they call them in, meaning they'll call and say, we had a leak in the basement. Well, they might take that rated down. Then you might get a call a day later saying, hey, your claim's denied because we don't cover leaks. Well, that's over time. Leaks are not covered. Well, you said it was a leak, but technically it was a pipe burst, which a pipe burst is covered, right?
Gotcha. It seems like there's a lot of gaming involved in this, where it's like, I mean, should it be that way, or is there a better way to do this, or do we see a brighter future in this industry, or is this just
you got to learn to play the game? It's only going the wrong way, and the reason is for the local, the staff adjusters, all the more experienced adjusters are leaving, and they're bringing on all these, they call them CAD adjusters or out of state adjusters. They're bringing those in. And just more inexperienced adjusters that never handled the claim, but all they know is they get a piece of paper and say, these are our guidelines. We don't pay for this, we pay for this, right? So then when we come in and we're meeting with these adjusters, you're talking about someone that just finished college that's got a laptop and saying, okay, well, I don't pay for this and we can't do this and this is not covered. They have no clue most of the time what they're talking about.
How do you combat that? Like, what do you guys do in that process that maybe us as just average Joe property owner just simply wouldn't understand?
Yeah. With the experience we have in construction, estimating, we're always, our company especially, something that's huge on our end is knowledge and learning as we go forward, is taking more seminars and learning and actually knowing how to combat insurance companies, negotiate it, having the right tools to do it. So because you just can't tell the insurance, hey, you need to pay for this or you need to do that. Like, you have to support everything. So providing those supportive documents, it's huge.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So one of the first things you said here on the due side is on a large claim, just say it's a total loss. The second thing is to identify actually what happened, not a pipe leak, it was a pipe burst. And then, of course, getting accurate estimates there. Are there any other dues on the front end that you say, man, this is something that people absolutely should be doing?
Yeah, mitigate the damage, meaning actually have someone on your team that if you have a fire, they board up the windows, you have a water loss, they extract the water. If you don't mitigate, they can deny your claim. That's in your policy. So knowing your policy and actually knowing what's in there, there's a section called duties after a loss. That's the first thing you should know. That's the first thing we get. When we would get the policy from the insurance company, the first thing we read is the duties after a loss. Because there's so many things you have to do to actually make sure your loss is covered.
That's really, really good advice. That's not a section of any insurance policy I think I've ever read.
I don't think anyone's ever read any of their policy.
Actually, I've read a fair amount of it because I kind of nerd out on that stuff. It's like, but I still didn't know that page existed. Like, so clearly I haven't.
And it's the most important page. There's usually like 10 bullet points and it says all the things. Now, they'll pay a claim even if you don't perform some of the duties. But at the end, if it went to litigation or it keeps going further, negotiations up, they can say, well, you never filed a proof of loss. You never mitigated. There's other stuff you didn't do. We have claims with commercial properties where, let's say it was vacant or it was under construction. They denied it saying you didn't, heat the property. They can deny the claim, right? You didn't maintain heat in the building.
Right.
Right. But then there's a clause that technically we can overturn that saying, well, if the property's under construction, then the claim is covered. So just knowing the policy, knowing the duties after loss would highly recommend. A good agent should be able to explain all that to you.
Right, right. And that was my next question was, at what point in time is this the responsibility of the agent selling you the policy to help educate you and say, okay, here's what you should be doing? And then at what point in time is it where you say, all right, you're playing for the insurance team and I'm going to have to go find my own private adjuster?
Correct. And a lot of the leads we get or a lot of referrals we get are actually from insurance agents, especially on the commercial side, because they don't really know the policies. They're pretty comprehensive policies. There's co-insurance clauses. There's all these clauses and exclusions. They sell these policies. It's hard to find a good commercial agent. But if you're going to start investing to commercial, I highly recommend that you do your due diligence and find an agent that can actually tell you, look, well, this is the business I have. I have storage facilities. I have this 20 unit. But these are all the people in it. Make sure there's coverage for everything.
Yeah. And that's something probably we need to work through with our insurance agent, is finding them to say, hey, these are the 25 scenarios. This is what we need coverage for. So that's really, really fascinating. Thanks for sharing the do side. What are the don'ts?
What are the don'ts? Let's see here. Don't be in a hurry is my number one. A lot of people want to be in a hurry and the agents say, well, I got a guy that's going to help you out. He's a contractor and adjuster's got a guy and everyone's got a guy and everyone wants to push you to move the claim and keep going and get it done. Because the quicker they can settle it, they know it's underpaid, the quicker they can close out the claim. That's the number one thing. Don't be in a hurry. Our commercial clients are our favorite because they're usually are more, hey, I'm not in a hurry. I have my own contractors. Let's get it settled. It's more when it comes to the residential claims, I think. A lot of those people with families, they just want to be back in the house. And then at the end, they're like, wow, well, we don't even have enough money to fix our house. You were in such a hurry, you just let them do anything, and now you're out of money.
That's really, really sound advice. So don't be in a hurry. What else you have after that? I guess, are there things we should and shouldn't say? Are there documents we shouldn't sign? Are there anything along those lines where you say, and maybe that's part of the don't be in a hurry thing, is there just something we should categorically avoid?
Yeah, I think just saying the wrong stuff in terms of don't be in a hurry, don't start calling. And because the insurance company, when you call the claim, when you're speaking with them, they'll ask you 100 questions and they'll record everything. And then if you say the wrong thing, then we get called and say, well, there's this whole trace of, we have to go back and like look, go through a whole story of what happened in the last 3 months. Well, you started out with telling them that this happened and that's what got the claim delayed and now technically denied. So knowing what to say and actually maybe consulting someone, a PA or an attorney, when you have a claim, to make sure you present it to the insurance well.
Give me a case study. Yeah, and it come to mind where you say, hey, this is what happened. This is how we could help. We helped.
It was another investor actually in your area of Memphis. He had a 16-unit building. His claim was denied. Called us, was referred by one of his actually students, one of his listeners. His claim was denied because they said it was sewer backup. And his claim wasn't covered. Technically, and this is a big tip for all your listeners, if they ever claim where it's sewer backup and they don't have sewer backup limit. Well, sewer backup is sewer that backs up from usually the sewer, like the streets or overflows or something. Most of the time, it's called a soft clog, meaning something actually gets clogged in the pipe. That's why the pipe overflows. And that's covered under your main limit. So that loss, for example, that case study, that loss was denied. Because two of the units got damaged. I think we finished at 70,000. So he had zero denied after months of fighting with them. And then we ended up finishing a claim at 70,000.
Wow. And what did you call that? A soft clog versus a sewer backup?
Yes. So two different things. Soft clog and sewer backup, two different things.
That's, again, it goes back to just the nuance of this where it's like, I feel I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I freely admit that, but it's like, there's so much nuance to this. That's like, this should seemingly be more straightforward where it's like, there is sewage in our building, but how that sewage got there or what caused that sewage to get there is the difference between $0 from the insurance company and $70,000 from the insurance company. And how do we as commercial real estate investors educate ourselves on that? I mean, because again, you said these policies are hyper nuanced.
Right.
What should I be doing to make sure that I understand this on the front end?
So first of all, a policy is written for the consumer, right? So it's not supposed to be written as an attorney is supposed to interpret it. It's supposed to be easy to read, but they're never easy to read. They're so complicated. Even when we go to read them, we're looking them up and we have that because they're very confusing.
Yeah.
So they're not written in your favor. Also, the adjuster is supposed to have an eye for coverage. It's what they used to call it, eye for coverage, meaning they technically were always taught that they had an eye for coverage, meaning they should always look to cover your loss. But once insurance companies took in the McKinsey model, and I don't want to get into this whole Allstate McKinsey thing, but they accepted this model, McKinsey model of how they handle claims now. Most claims are denied. They're never looking to cover loss. Instead, they're more looking, okay, what's this? Oh, how can we deny this instead of how can we cover it? That's every claim how we see going now is it's how can we deny it instead of how can we cover it? So then we have to come in and look at, okay, that pipe there was leaking. Well, was it leaking over time? Did something hit it? How did it burst? You know, you just have to find the real culprit to see if there's coverage in the policy for it.
That is absolutely correct. And that's one of the things, I guess, that as business owners, as real estate investors, that's really frustrating in this space is, and again, I was signing a policy here for a renewal on a commercial building and I just started reading through it and I got halfway through. I'm just like, I don't understand what I'm reading anymore. Like, I don't know.
Those commercial, that's why I say 40 unit less, the residential, those policies, they're, I don't know, 60 pages. Those commercial ones, I mean, they get thick. Those binders get thick. I mean, there's a lot in them.
A lot in them. And by the time I feel like it's a spider web of like, you know, if this, then that, but that, and then by the time it's all done, it's like, I don't know, this is a ball of exclusions and things that are covered that I can't even begin to remember. So I guess your point.
When you say education, learning, or where can you, there's really, it's hard because everything's so skewed. If you go online and say, do I need a public adjuster or should I hire a PA? You'll find half articles, yes, all good, and then half bad. And those bad ones are all written by insurance companies. No one even tells you that you can hire a PA. Like a lot of people don't know there's actually a private adjuster you can hire to look over your claim. And you don't even have to hire us. You can just literally have us look over your claim to see if it was, I went to one yesterday. It was a fire. It was a friend that called, looked over the claim. I'm like, there's a couple things missing, but I'll give you the tips and advice when you tell them to get it paid. There's nothing else for us to do. I'm just saying it doesn't hurt to call because of good PAs and the ones that are very knowledgeable, they'll look over a claim. Like our firm doesn't take on a claim unless we look over and make sure we can bring value to it. So if I can't bring value to it, Sam, then there's no need for us, or I'm not going to waste your time, or you're going to waste each other's time.
Absolutely. And that brings back us to the last question. Maybe this is too granular or too personal to have on a podcast question, but I guess I got to ask it. How do you guys get paid in this process?
Yeah, a PA usually charges between 10 to 20, 25%, depending. We cover 12 states, so we've just taken the model of 10% across the board. When we do commercial and large, we have a scale that drops down the percentage from 10 to after $1 million, it's 5%. We cap it for like really large claims for our larger clients, but that's our firm. Again, everyone does a little bit differently. We do a flat 10%. And like I said, when we do the large claims, then we have a scale that kind of goes down based on if that claim is to reach a certain amount.
Right. No, I love that. That's great. Last question for you here, Andy. If someone were to come work with your firm, what makes them a great client for you guys that you say, man, that's somebody I really want to work with?
Someone that trusts us. Someone that when I talk to says, Andy, I just want you to handle that claim. Just settle it. Handle everything for me. Just let me know when we're done. Here, let me know the amounts. That's the best client. The client that's worried about the percentage up front, what they have to pay or what's our fee, those clients right away, I can tell you, then let's not work together. Because the value I bring to you, literally we can charge to over 50% on each claim and you'd still be better off if you didn't hire us.
Right. I love that. And that's a fair and honest reply. And I appreciate that because everybody has in their own industry, whether you're a broker, whether you're a buyer, a seller, there's like people you want to work with. And then there's people you're like, hey, this just isn't a good fit for us. So certainly appreciate your transparency.
And commercial clients like you, Sam, you guys invest in commercial, and your listeners are our favorites because they usually have their own team of contractors and roof presenters, their whole team. So when we come on their team, we're just in charge of getting their claims paid fully, making sure that they have all the money. Then they can get their own guys. They're not having the insurance company take all their money and do their work, right? So it works out in their favor.
That's awesome. Andy, thank you for coming on the show today and taking the time to break down what a public adjuster or private adjuster is, how you guys work, how you guys get paid, what to do, the right things to do, the wrong things to do. And really, I guess, bringing a little clarity perhaps and saying that the industry is just pretty confusing as it is. And it's probably not going to change anytime in the future, but at least you've given us some some tips and tricks on how to navigate those murky waters. So I certainly appreciate it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way for your listeners, what I'll do is I'll leave you my personal cell phone. If any of your listeners want to call me or text me, I'll leave them my cell phone. That way, that's the quickest way they can save that number in their phone book. Because again, you might never need me, or you might have two claims in a year. So they want to save my phone number at 708-655-4186, 708-655-4186. And that's literally my cell phone. They call me, text me. They have any questions, I'm more than happy. I'm very open to helping people. So
that's awesome. Andy, thank you again for coming on today. I certainly appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.